Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Buddhaṃ dhammaṃ saṅghaṃ namassāmi. This being the fourth talk of this rainy season retreat, it's almost a quarter of the way, probably over a quarter of the way, of the rains retreat this year. It goes very quickly, but this is a time when our meditation is starting to go strongly. 3 weeks where there's been very little activity for many of you, and this is the opportunity to really develop the mind into deeper and deeper states of stillness. And today's talk, I wanted to continue on the subject of deepening one's meditation. Sometimes it's easy to sort of talk about dhammas in the sense of where this all leads. But I think it's more important to actually give people the help, the instructions, the directions, so they can find out these truths for themselves. And indeed, it's important to understand the path of meditation. Even though it may be emphasized in quiet and peaceful states of mind, it also involves a lot of wisdom and understanding. In fact, as one deepens one's meditation, one finds one does come across these obstacles. And each obstacle one comes across in the meditation is fuel for wisdom. It's where wisdom arises, which is why that this is not just a way of developing peaceful states of mind for the sake of peace. Peace is the incentive. Now the bliss is the bribe. But as we go along to this path, it is the wisdom and understanding we get along the way which is perhaps the most important of all, the most valuable reward for this practice. Because as we come across these obstacles are attachments. These obstacles which we come across are the five hindrances. And sometimes you read about all sorts of ideas of what attachments are, what craving is, of what hindrances are. But that's just that, just ideas, just projections, just proliferations based on views and ideas. They're not really based on understanding through experience of actually coming across these obstacles as we practice our meditation. So every time you're meditating, if there's an obstacle comes up which is a hindrance, we need to investigate to know it and realize that this is a craving, an attachment. It's coming from a source. What is that source? So we understand it. Whenever there's any restlessness in the mind, why is there restlessness there? Why is it that you can't just sit down and do nothing for an hour? Isn't that just the most wonderful thing to do? Just absolutely doing nothing, rather than writing letters, thinking about this, planning that, worrying about something else. Surely just the idea of doing nothing is just so attractive. However, when you try and do this, you just sit down. We always tend to go and planning, expecting. If it's not actually planning just, you know, what we're going to cook tomorrow, we're planning actually what meditation we're going to do next. We're planning what nimitta is going to come next. We're planning what jhana we want today, or whatever it is that we're planning. We can never just sit still and do nothing and relax. We always encourage restlessness, which is why that when we see this happening, we see it again and again and again and again, why we can't stay still, why we can't do nothing. We have to figure out why, what's happening here. And you've heard me talk before about this thing called the dua, this aspect of the illusion of self. As long as there's an illusion of self, there'll be this dua there, this grasper, this controller, this planner, this manager, this manipulator, this fault finder. It's all coming from this doer thing. So if you have restlessness, at least acknowledge that that's a doer there. And that's all coming from an expression of this illusion of self. The self wants to do, to express itself, because that's how it finds its validity. That's how it is. That to do is to be. And having seen that, at least you know what the cause is. It's a delusion that you have to do something in order to have this idea of existence. In order to stop that we have to follow the path of happiness. That's the way we overcome the problem of the self, the illusion of the self. Unless you've got happiness there, the mind hasn't got power. And the fear and the stubbornness of the mind, the conditioned stubbornness of the mind, it's always been like that, it always wants to be like that. The habits of that mind will still continue to run all over your mind and never allow you to be still. It's not the nature of a mind to be still when it's got delusion there. As long as there's a sense of self there, the doer will always be moving you, will always be finding fault, will always be wanting something more. It's that doer which creates the craving. The illusion of self is the origin of dhanha. When actually you start to see this, you understand what's going on. But how can you overcome that illusion at this particular time? How can you stop that? And you have to follow the path of pleasure, mental power, piti sukha. Because after a while you find that when the mind develops this, what I was talking last week, this contentment in the moment, this contentment in this moment, this inner peace, this satisfaction with what's going on here, this overcoming of the doer, because you realize this is good enough, this is all right. Even if you brainwash yourself into thinking this is all right, condition yourself, recondition yourself, convince yourself that this is okay in this moment. Only then, through the happiness of now, can you actually halt this restless doer. Sometimes you look at all the things which have been done in this monastery. Isn't it enough? Or are we going to do some more? All the things you've done in your hut, is it enough yet? Or do you need to do some more? All the things which you've done for your body, is it enough yet? Or do you need to do some more? There's always some more to do if you think like that. And the only way you can stop is to turn the mind in an opposite direction. Turn the mind into seeing that this is good enough. This moment is good enough, which means bringing happiness into the moment. When we bring happiness into the moment, you find there's no reason to do anything. Very often you find when your meditation's going very, very well, when you're really getting into some very peaceful states, you start to look upon this monastery and you think, why do we need to do anything here? What's the point of building all these huts or doing this and doing that? When you're very, very still, you see the world in a different way. You see the world which is beyond restlessness. And this is a very fascinating perspective. When you get these different perspectives, these different data on experience, that's where you get the insight from. You have to somehow stop restlessness just for a few moments to see what it's like when the mind does nothing. And to understand that in that doing nothing, in that not comparing, not measuring, not doing anything, there's an end of restlessness there. The mind doesn't need to go anywhere. It's like this mind which has always been running around backwards and forwards. Stay still for a moment and suddenly realizes that all that coming and going was all just to be here. And you wondered why you ever ran away from this place. This is the only home you'll ever have. And this is peaceful. This is bliss. If you can only just come in and enjoy it. So in one's meditation, there are times when one just sits down and one does nothing. And one doesn't try One doesn't measure. One doesn't force. And you find you're overcoming this amazing hindrance of restlessness through the power of contentment. Contentment upon contentment, and the mind gets stiller and stiller. And instead of a mind which is obsessed with restlessness, always on the run, it becomes a mind which is happy in stillness. As I was saying last week, it becomes a mind which is satisfied with little. It's not just satisfied with little, it's delighted with little. It's blissed out with little. It realizes how little it needs to be just so blissed. And restlessness starts to end there. So when it happens in one's meditation, the one is running all over the place. Understand why. There's a lack of proper seeing there. One is actually searching, as Ajahn Chah used to say, for the tortoise with a moustache, looking for something which you can never find. But it's a habit. And somehow or other one has to stop once. Stop and just be. And stop trying to compare or trying to gain anything. Stop comparing and thinking that, you know, this is what jhana is and this is what one wants. Jhana is right in this moment, it's not in the next moment. So bliss is right here. If one starts letting go of the restlessness which forces the mind away. There comes many times in one's meditation when one strives and strives and strives. Many times when one gets so frustrated because the striving never gets anywhere. And there comes a time when one completely gives up. And that's the time when peace comes. You've all heard those beautiful stories of the nun, I think it was Siha, who had no happiness in her meditation for 6 or 7 years, and then took a rope and tried to hang herself. And just before she threw herself off the branch with the rope tied to her neck, she let go. At that moment, when she wasn't striving anymore, she had a deep experience, understood what letting go means. Restlessness was abandoned. Desire was stopped for that moment, enough for her to understand the path to Nibbana, stopping, ending. So not only this path of stopping, ending, is a way to overcome restlessness, you see it as a path which goes far deeper than that. You're understanding the way of meditation, the way of monastic life, the way of letting go, all the way to Nibbana. The path becomes incredibly clear for you. You know exactly what's going on, why this happens, and what's going to happen. You understand as soon as you start letting go of craving, sensory desire, or ill will, all these other hindrances, as soon as you see through them and stop them, then the mind just becomes calm and peaceful. You'll start to notice in your meditation the result of calm and peacefulness is that things disappear. It's an amazing thing that if you don't hang on to anything, if you don't try and do anything, as if the whole universe just starts to melt away, starts to disappear and vanish. It's what we call viraga in Buddhism. Viraga means a fading away of things. And it's marvelous actually to watch the fading away. You watch the fading away of restlessness, a problem which was there for you for so long. And now without trying to get rid of it, just through contentment, being happy just to sit, to be in your heart, just to sit down. Not trying to get anywhere, just happy to be in this moment. You find the restlessness just fades away. It just vanishes. You realize just how easy it is to overcome restlessness and just to be still. You reflect afterwards and understand why the mind was always moving and running around, searching for the tortoise with a moustache, searching for happiness somewhere else, thinking when this job is done, then I'll be happy, thinking that when I get jhana, then I'll be okay, and when I get nimitta, then my meditation will be okay. If you think like that, you'll always miss the point. Your meditation is okay. It's according to causes and conditions, that's all. This is nothing to do with you. There's not a person in there who can be judged. There's no one in there who owns your meditation. There's no one there who owns your experiences. It's just experiences, that's all. Just things which come and go according to their conditions. So when you start to really let go, then you find all the restlessness disappears. Not only the restlessness disappears, but sort of the the body starts to disappear. This body of ours, which I was talking about a couple of weeks ago, which, incredible just how much we're attached to this body, just how much we care for it, how much we worry about it, how much we think about it, and how difficult it is to put down. This body dies, as we all know. We've just been chanting about people who are dying, or close to death, or dead already. And each one of you are the same. You're close to death, or dying, or dead already. Parts of you, anyway. When you think about this, so why are you concerned about this body? I'm trying to make it comfortable. When you sit in meditation, you should abandon the body. And abandoning the body means abandoning the senses, which are here to try and protect the body, or look after the body. You abandon sight. In this monastery, you don't go around looking at things. Why are you looking at things? Haven't you looked at enough things already in your life? You look at one tree and another tree, they look the same to me. So why you don't go travelling down south, up north, out east, west, or whatever? Just one tree looks the same. Just one ocean looks the same as any other ocean to me. One bird, another bird, pretty much the same. One flower, one weed. Sometimes I can't tell the difference. When I was young, the only two birds I knew were pigeons and sparrows. I lived in London. It's quite nice not being close to nature in that respect. You stop sort of being caught up in these things. You're not caught up in the world. You're not caught up in sights or sounds or smells or tastes or touches in the body. Painful feeling, pleasant feeling, just feeling, that's all. Just part of the body, nothing to do with me. As you meditate, you just focus inside until the body completely disappears. And if it can't disappear, you ask yourself why. Why is it that I can't stop hearing? I can't stop feeling? I asked myself that question many years ago. Why is it you're sitting there and you hear all these coughs, or you hear the sound of the birds, or you hear the sort of the animals in the forest? And after a while you found that you actually weren't just hearing these things, you were listening out for them. You're actually going out there to try and find something to disturb yourself. That's what it was. When I was meditating, you sat down there, made myself comfortable, and just watched my breath, and just the body disappeared at first. And then it came back again afterwards with an ache or with an itch. Think, what's going on there? What was going on there was I was getting restless. My mind wasn't satisfied, so it went out for something to disturb itself. It's amazing just how we make problems for ourselves. How we like problems. How we identify with the problems. How we make ourselves out of the problems and the doing and the making and the solving of those problems. And it takes a bit of courage just to leave the problems alone. Let them be. Let the problems in the world be. In a meditation retreat, it's somebody else's problem. You just leave it alone. You don't listen. You don't feel about your body. You just want it, what it wants to do, it can do. But you just completely put it down. Put it down means not being concerned with it. If you can't do that, if you can't let go of your body, it does mean there's an attachment there. There is a clinging going on. Because why is it you can't let go of the body? It must be that somehow you say, that's mine, it's me. That's why sometimes we're afraid of pain. We think it's my pain. Sometimes you're afraid of sickness. You think it's my sickness. Afraid of death. Only when you think it's my death. All of these things which, you know, create that fear, which stop you being at peace, which stop you letting go. These are all those attachments again, those clingings. We're grasping onto something. So every time that comes up, we know that that's an attachment there. And that's where we develop our wisdom, the wisdom which frees the mind, in this case from the body. You can imagine yourself dying now. Die tonight. Die to the body. So you don't care about this body anymore. You just meditate instead. This body just dies, so what? I just, one of the monks who came for an interview today, saw this beautiful picture on my shrine of that monk who was found in a cave in the north of Thailand, whose body was desiccated because he died in the lotus position, sitting meditation. There were just scraps of robe found around him. He'd been in that cave for decades, apparently, because none of the local villagers could remember him ever going there. It must have been so long ago. It was quite inspiring to see a monk who had just sat down, meditated, and doesn't matter about what his body was up to. He just allowed it to die as he carried on with his meditation and didn't even move. Just like the Buddha says in the suttas, though my bones will turn to dust, though my blood will dry up, I will not move from this position until I gain complete, full enlightenment. There's a picture there in my shrine of a monk who certainly sat until his bones, well, they actually didn't turn to dust, they're still there, but certainly all his sinews dried up. And that's an inspiring example of someone who could let go of the body, let go of that attachment there. And this is actually why we do that body contemplation, in order to weaken that attachment. And we know that we've fulfilled that body contemplation, where we can fully let go of the body and its five senses. We can quite happily just go into peace, into stillness, into our mind. So we don't hear anything. We're not interested in hearing. That's why we don't hear. We're not interested in feeling the body. That's why we don't feel. Sometimes we think it's the body disturbing us. And it's not. The insight should come up. And it's a powerful insight to have. It's the body doesn't disturb the mind. It's the attachment, the craving, the asawa which goes out, which goes into that body and starts to look for things to disturb itself. That's all. It's connected to this body through delusion. And through that connection, it brings up the burden of the body, the burden of trying to make it comfortable, of pleasure and pain. It's wonderful if you can put that down. Which means dying in this moment, dying to the body and the five senses, letting them completely go. Because that's one of the biggest hindrances to the deep meditations. It's also the fetters which keep you to the lower realms of karma loka. If one can let go of these things, let go of the body and its feelings, then there's nothing between you and getting into the jhana states. You're abandoning a huge burden. And it's wonderful to abandon that. It's because of the pleasure which comes, the sense of freedom, the happiness which comes, is again the bribe which almost tricks attachment into letting itself go. You're afraid of letting go of the body, but it's so nice when you can see what's on the other side. So pleasurable. That the mind leaps towards it. It leaps to where it finds happiness. Little by little, the body disappears. It's literally viragas, fades away. That's the result of giving up attachments. At least if you're giving it up temporarily, the body just completely disappears. And you go into the realm of the mind. In that realm of the mind, sometimes you first of all get the echoes of the body. And the echoes of the five sense world. These are the thoughts, the proliferations of that five sense world. Those proliferations should at least be, in theory, should be easier to overcome, easier to let go of. But sometimes we get so attached and obsessed with that world. If we're not actually experiencing it, we're fantasizing about it, we're thinking about it, we're planning it, we're remembering it. At least that much you should see is a huge burden, which you do not need to do. this monastery is simple. You don't need to think too much or plan too much. And the little thinking you have to do or planning you have to do, surely you can actually put that aside when it's time to meditate. If you can't, it means you're attached to those thoughts. Why are we attached to thoughts? What is the big thing about thinking? Again, it's another expression of the doer. When I think, you have the illusion I am. We're doing something. We're there. We're checking our existence, affirming our existence with thought. And when we shut up, when everything is still, it's as if we're not there. That scares us at first, but after a while we find it's much more fun not being there. It's much more beautiful, much more peaceful, much more blissful, just giving up all thought. And it's that insight based on experience, the insight of the pleasure of silence, of the end of thought, which makes the mind leap towards that peacefulness. When the body is gone, the thinking of gone, when there's no sight, no sound, no smell, no taste, no touch, especially no thinking, what can happen next? The only thing which can happen is no planning, no expectation. Remember, all that thinking is a movement of the mind. If you give up the thoughts, you're stopping a lot of movement. The mind is becoming still. And it's its nature, because it's letting go of these attachments, letting go of these fetters, even though temporarily it's loosening them for a while. You get closer and closer into the realm beyond the five senses, outside of Karma Loka, into the Rupa Loka and Arupa Loka. The three worlds in Buddhism are Karma Loka, the world of the five senses, in other words, the realm of the body, Rupa Loka, the realm of the jhanas, and Arupa Loka, the immaterial realms. You're finding out what those realms are. In the qualities of the Buddha, when it says knower of the worlds, Loka Vidu, that's what it refers to. Someone who knows not just the realm of this body, but also the other realms as well, in particular the Rupa realms and Arupa realms, knows jhanas, and knows the immaterial realms as well. You can't become enlightened if you've only got just a fraction of knowledge about the samsara. And as one gets closer and closer into these states, the mind gets more and more refined, more and more bliss, more and more powerful. The mindfulness gets stronger. Sometimes that you read people talking about the importance of mindfulness. It is important, but you need to superpower mindfulness, to know a mindfulness which is much greater than the ordinary, to understand just how insight truly occurs. Not only do you need a power of insight, we need to be focusing it in those all-important areas, the refined areas of the deep meditations. You need the data, the experience, the information. When you get still, you understand the bliss of stillness. Those who have never been still can never imagine just how beautiful it is. As you get deeper and deeper into stillness, get into nimitta realms. People who haven't achieved nimittas yet can't imagine just how beautiful they are, just how blissful they are. That's why I keep on saying they're more blissful than sex. They're more blissful than anything else you can imagine in this world. They're beyond anything which the realm of the five senses can offer you. That's why those insights based on experience start to shatter attachments. Why would anyone be attached to this body and to this world when they have this other thing they can go to? Why would they be thinking so much when they have all this bliss, when thinking stops and the mind starts to become still? Trouble is that when you get that still and that blissed out, you find that something very important is missing, the doer. This is where that experiencing itself, you realize that that doer was a huge amount of suffering. It wasn't you. It wasn't anything worth valuing. It wasn't anything worth proclaiming and guarding and worshipping. It was something which was a huge obstacle to your happiness and to your freedom. People think that the freedom to do, human rights, the right of movement, the right of thought, the right of speech, the right of doing, we all think that that's an important part of human happiness. As a Buddhist, you see it's quite the opposite. It just entangles people more in the world. All doing, all thinking, all movement just creates a suffering. And you know that because you've gone in the opposite direction. You've let go. You stop doing. You stop experiencing through the senses, through the five senses. You've gone inside. You stop this doing business. Even when you come to the state of nimittas, these beautiful, powerful lights in the mind, just bathing you with bliss. The thing you should notice there, after reflection, that to go deeper, you have to give up more of the doing, more letting go of control, no fault finding. It's interesting that when you have a nimitta come up, just how many people actually just find fault with it. They just see the dark areas, or see the places where it's not beautiful, which is why you've heard me say before, when a nimitta comes up, always go to the most beautiful part. Fault finders can't do that. They always go to the ugly part, the negative part. Why do you do that? Because you think that's where a problem is and that's where I'll solve it. That's where you can do things in imperfection. Where there's perfection, the doer just can't survive. That's why you go to the perfect parts of the nimittas. If you can let go, if you can stop doing, that happens naturally. You're understanding a path which goes into bliss, which goes into letting go. And it's a path of overcoming the self. Letting it go, putting it aside, to go for the bliss instead. And when you can experience those deep bliss states, and reflect upon them afterwards, you know in those states there's no place where a doer can exist. You get these amazing insights into just what doing is all about, what activity is. The craving to do is what makes the sense of self. And then just all questions about what nibbana is become very clear for you. You understand just doing things is suffering. Making, thinking, this is what is dukkha, what causes rebirth. You can go even deeper and look at this thing which we call the knowing aspect of the self. Sometimes that we can give up the doing, but we can't give up the knowing. That's why beings get reborn in the jhana realms, in the rupa lokas for eons. Or the arupa lokas, if the mind is more refined, then get reborn in there because they're attached to the knowing. They think that the knowing is the end of things, the knowing of bliss. But after a while, there's a momentum has been built up there by gaining the jhanas. And that momentum is the momentum of letting go, of abandoning. It's as if there's a path has been revealed to you. A path of just seeing how much one can give up. Just how much one can allow to disappear. It's a path of viraga, of things fading away. And as you gain those jhanas, those bliss states, you find there's always things disappearing, bit by bit, one after the other. You find the great bliss of the first jhana disappears, and with it the wobble. It's the last little piece of very refined movement and goes into just this very solid samadhi, a rock-like diamond samadhi of a second jhana. No movement possible at all, a different type of bliss. Look afterwards why? It's because something faded away, something went. It's important actually to know that which went, the last movement of the mind. You look at third jhana, something else goes, this piti part of happiness. Remember at this particular stage that happiness is your knowing. And these stages, that's the content of your mind. And that content is completely united with that which knows it. That's why these states are also states where non-duality arises for the first time. Not as a theory, not as something which you write books about, but as an experience. It's called ekagata, just the oneness of the mind. Coming to this one peak, this one point. That's non-duality. It's one, eka. Ekagata, one aga. And that's one of the experiences you have in those states. It's no movement, no separation between a no and a do is at all possible. That will take a two, that will break the whole samadhi. It's just a oneness of the mind, a perfect oneness. It's what happens first of all in samadhi, perfect samadhi of the second jhana. But these things start to disappear, knowing starts to go. And you start to look after a while. Why am I attached to knowing? You look at this whole knowing business. Why do I want to know? Something happens in the monastery. You want to know. A letter's passing by. You want to know it. You want to know the news. You want to know what happened, who won the footy. Whatever it is, you want to know. Why? Because knowing is being. You build up your sense of self on the amount of knowledge, on the amount which you know. Some people on their ability to know, their intelligence, their wisdom or whatever. And you can actually see with great clarity just how knowing makes a self. And that is an illusion. After a while, one gives up knowing. Little by little, parts of knowing disappear. Consciousness fades away. You find that is one of the attachments. For the non-returner, rupa raga and arupa raga, the sixth and seventh fetters, sanyojanas, the desire, the lust, the craving, the love of the rupa states, this beautiful knowing, the most refined knowing you can ever have in arupa states. Neva sanya na sanya, just so refined, is between being perceptive and non-perceptive. Can't tell which. In these states, knowing, sanya is almost gone. And then if you're lucky, you can let go of that last piece of knowing. The letting go, the abandoning, the relinquishing. What the Buddha said in the third Noble Truth is a way to end suffering. You're doing. So, chaga, throwing away, patinisaga, chucking it away, muti, freeing, analaya. So these things can't stick in the mind. Things disappear and fade away. And you understand what nibbana is in this very life. The cessation of perception, cessation of feeling, with it the cessation of consciousness. Everything gone. Real emptiness, full emptiness. Sometimes it's hard to understand that when one hasn't got into jhanas, when one hasn't actually allowed even the body to disappear. How on earth can consciousness disappear? It's hard to see that. Which is why the path of meditation is the way where we understand these fetters, understand these attachments. We understand them by getting on the other side of them. Understanding when they're not there, so we understand what it was like to have that fetter. Remember Ajahn Chah's simile of the man who was born with a rope around his neck, and that rope was being pulled by two demons who he couldn't see. He was born like that, so he was used to it. He didn't know any difference. He thought it was usual to have it hard to breathe. And then one day, those two demons took a break. And the rope loosened and he could breathe. Oh, what bliss. He understood what attachment had been and what it was like to be free of attachment. What craving was like and what it was like to be free of craving. Just for those few minutes when those demons of desire and ill will just put down their rope for a few moments and loosen the grip. That's what it's like practicing meditation. The two demons, or rather the five demons, five hindrances, loosen their grip for a few moments and you feel freedom. You can breathe. You can have happiness, peace, all the things which you always wanted in the world. And it shows you what attachments are. The point of that simile is that when you haven't loosened that string, when you haven't realized what it's like to be free of the five hindrances, you cannot know what those five hindrances are. You cannot know because they've always been there. You're used to them. A fish living in water can never know what water is until it leaves the water for the first time. This is why that we make those little jumps through the hindrances, through the fetters, temporarily, but we understand what it's like when the rope is loosened. Gain those insights, those understandings, which eventually loosen those ropes so much that everything is allowed to disappear. As everything is allowed to disappear, it's because the illusion of self is penetrated. First of all, we penetrate the illusion of the doer. Then we penetrate the illusion of the knower. What is it which knows? It's just this empty process. Because it's an empty process, nothing to do with us. We can let it go. It's non-self. Not me, not mine. There's no one in here, the Buddha kept on saying. Anatta. Not me. Not mine, not a self. Nothing belongs to you. Five khandhas, that's all they are, just khandhas. Body, just four elements. Mind, just mind. Just go their own way. Depart, finish, gone, ended. This is like the freedom of Buddhism. So actually what we're doing on all the different stages of the path of meditation, we're finding out these wonderful truths for ourselves. Truths which you can read about in the books, but which you can never understand because they haven't been related to one's experience. As we relate them to our experiences at all the different stages of the meditation, that which calls the Dhamma of the Buddha starts to open up to us, become brilliant, become clear. You understand what the Buddha was. That's why that when we do this, we understand why the one who sees the Buddha sees the Dhamma. Sees the Dhamma of letting go. And the Buddha is the one who let go. Understand how those two go together. Understand the Arahat and the Buddha, there's nothing between them. Just let go, that's all. There's nothing left. Understand what happens. So these are all one's own experiences. One's own insights. Which comes through letting go. So as one develops this practice, this is where it will lead. Every time you have an experience, if there's a doing there, let it go. There's more to get, it's more in front of you. You haven't finished yet if there's still doing. Any expectation, any planning, any fault finding, you're putting obstacles in the way of yourself. Take away all that fault-finding, all that measuring, and just sit. Just sit a lot and walk a lot, that's all. You've got to be doing something, so you just sit there. Go do something to pass away the day. Don't pass away the day, just be in the day, be in the moment. Just sit there and see what happens. Or rather, not see what happens, see what is happening. And seeing how much one can let go. Of the doer. Let it go, 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 go. All restlessness eventually fades away. All tiredness eventually fades away. All fear eventually fades away. All plans fade away. All hopes fade away. All parts of doing. When everything fades away, so does the realm of the five senses. So does the body, just fades away. Never anything substantial, just a mirage anyway, and it's gone. Was it just the Buddha said, just like froth on the Ganges is this body? And now it's just all been poked and disappeared like the froth which goes down the plug hole in the laundry. It's all gone. It's all disappeared. And all the rest of the khandhas is just fading away. Fading, going, 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 gone. And this is what happens in meditation. You just see things disappearing. So this is a way of fading. The way of renunciation, the way of relinquishing, the way of cessation, the way of nirvana. It's a very beautiful way to contemplate. It's a very beautiful way to practice. It brings you happiness upon happiness upon happiness. And it just breaks through all of the attachments. It breaks through all the stupidity of the world. If you really want freedom, if you're holding on to anything, you can never find that freedom. As the Buddha said, there's nothing worth holding on to. Nothing at all, not even consciousness. Doesn't praise even a bit of existence, just like even a bit of being, anything which is, the Buddha said, is suffering. Just like the bit of feces on his finger, doesn't praise even a bit of existence. So just allow it all to just disappear and fade away. So this is actually the path of our practice, the path of letting go. And no matter what stage you are on this practice, no matter where you are, don't ever judge yourself. There's a simile which I gave years ago, which is, I think it's such an accurate simile. Nibbana is just one step away for each one of you. As if we are travelling up and down this very narrow stream, going up and down the left bank, up and down, wondering how on earth we're ever going to cross this stream to get to the other side, to Nibbana. And we could spend our whole life going up and down, doing things, getting rid of things by doing it rather than just letting it disappear. And after a while we go in a direction which only the Aryas grow. We just turn around and go perpendicular to the way we've always been going through our whole life. Going in a completely new direction than what we've ever done before. We go in the direction of non-doing. Of abandoning, of relinquishing, contentment, freedom. When we go in that direction, we find we press the letting go button. And we just step over to the other side. Jhanas are just so easy. Enlightenment is right there, because you've gone in the other direction, the way of the Aryans, not in the way of the Putujanas. Putujanas just stride up and down this side of the shore. The Aryas, they don't even need much of a raft, they can just step. It's that near. That's why enlightenment can happen just so quickly for anyone, just as long as one learns how to let go, to go in that other direction. To let go of the knower, let go of the doer. That has to stay on this side and just step over into the void. So that's a little talk this evening on meditation and emptiness and nibbana and everything. So hopefully you found something interesting in this talk this evening.
Bhagavato Sāvaka Sangho.